And like I mentioned, we do have our guest on the line, Mr. John Dietz on the line. And John, we say good morning to you. Welcome to the Chasm Airwaves.
Good morning, Si. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. And I understand you are residing in Slinger, Wisconsin?
Yeah, we call it the east coast of Wisconsin because we're not too far from Lake Michigan here. So, yeah, Slinger, Wisconsin.
All right. And what are the conditions like this morning over in Slinger?
Right now, it's mid-60s. The sun is peeking out just a little bit, and we're enjoying the nice weather. It's supposed to get rainy and a little crummy this afternoon. And we've had some questionable weather here, but nothing like what I hear you guys have been having.
So. Oh, we've been drowning, flooding. Lots and lots of rain. This has been one of the wettest years on record, so it's just incredible how much water we've absorbed this year already. So,
The beauty of social media is I'm able to follow along with everybody back home. I'm a New Prague, Montgomery area native.
Uh-huh. So, that was my next question. Were you always in Slinger, or where were you born and raised, I should ask?
Well, I was born in New Prague and, you know, raised in Montgomery, went to school there all through elementary, high school and that, and lived in Montgomery, New Prague area until 2003 when I moved out here to this area, pretty much, Jackson. I guess if any of your listeners have ever been out this way, Hartford is a very big polka community.
Mm-hmm.
So this moved to this area in 2003.
Okay, so. Very good. And been there ever since. Now,
yep.
Now, family man, do you have a family at all?
Well, that's where the story is actually fairly interesting of why I moved. My wife is from this area.
Oh, okay.
And I was in town for a concertina jamboree at the Chandelier Ballroom in Hartford.
Okay.
And it was advertised pretty heavy on the local, the Hartford radio station, WTKM.
Mm-hmm.
Their motto used to be the Polka Place. And
sure.
They were advertising I was coming out from Minnesota to this jamboree. It was the first one they were going to have there, so... my wife's grandmother, who I had met previously at a couple of these jamborees out here, you know, she remembered me and talked her granddaughter, and so we were set up basically at this jamboree. So the rest is history. You know?
Okay, well, very good. Well, I guess we should not keep the listeners in the dark any longer. What instruments do you play, John, and when did you get started?
I started on concertina at the age of about 8, seven or 8 years old. My dad got me started. My dad, Russ, got me started. He had taken some lessons from Larry Novotny.
Okay.
And he knew Jerry Minar pretty well, and that... dad took lessons from those guys, and dad got me started, you know, gave me the basics, you know, passed along what he was learning at the time, and I more or less just picked it up, you know, the rest of the way on my own. And then once I got further on in school, I started on trumpet in school band.
Mm-hmm.
And that only lasted a little less than a year, and they asked if I'd switch to tuba.
Oh.
And so I played tuba then all the way through, you know, through the end of high school, and still to this day, I still play tuba once in a while.
Okay.
Shortly after moving to Wisconsin, I started playing tuba and bass guitar with the Good Time Dutchman.
Oh, you have? Oh, okay.
I did. And I played with them pretty much full-time for, I want to say 5 or 6 years out
here. Okay.
And the last full year that I played full-time with them, and so with them and my own band stuff I was booking, you know, under my own name, I played 83 jobs in that 1 year.
Oh, my. That's busy.
It is. And at the time, I was a long-haul truck driver.
Oh, that too, yeah. Okay.
I'll tell you, it got to be a little much.
And, sure.
You know, so something had to give. I backed off on the playing a little bit. You know, concentrate on family for a couple of years, and now we're really getting back into, I fill in on tuba. Every time Barry Boyce comes to town, he's from Wahoo, Nebraska, or Omaha, when he comes out, I play tuba for him, and I fill in here and there. But now I'm mostly sticking on concertina.
Okay.
And that's bringing back the Twin Lakes Trio name, I guess I should say.
All right. And is that the name of the group that you founded then?
That is. And we started in 1994 as an FFA talent contest entry band.
Really?
Yep. We were at an FFA meeting, and one of the guys I played tuba with in the school band, he very deep polka background on him too, Mike Woodine. He plays tuba for like the Little Fisherman, Gordy Proska, Dale Peck the band, he plays with them. So we were being disruptive during the meeting, and the advisor said, "Hey, you guys that think you're so talented, why don't you do something with it and join the, you know, enter the talent contest?" And so him and I teamed up, and then another friend of ours that we sort of roped into it just because he was sitting close to us and we knew his brother had a drum set. That fellow's name was Kenny Pavic. We founded the Twin Lakes Trio in 1994. Around 96, Kenny backed off on the band, kind of went a little different direction, which was great, you know. And my brother Matt stepped in to fill the drummer role, and Matt's been the drummer for the we'll call it the Minnesota division of the Twin Lakes Trio ever since.
Okay.
Now, in recent history, my 12-year-old son is my drummer out here in Wisconsin.
Oh, that's neat.
It's great. And I have a full-time tuba player here who, he's got 50 years in the business. He's played for 100 bands. And I love the guy, and he drives me nuts because he's got a perfect pitch ear, which means when the train goes by, he can tell me what note the horn is blowing.
Really?
We've argued about it before, and he's always right, and it drives me up a wall.
And who would he be now?
His name is Greg Lamp.
Okay, very good.
And like I said, very good tuba player. He's really good with, he knows a lot of people and does a lot of traveling and that. So we've got a great dynamic for both. It's two bands under one roof kind of thing, you know. And every time I travel to Minnesota, I try to pick up a job up there when I'm home. So I'll get my brother Matt and Mike Woodine, my old tuba player. We'll get together and we'll play a gig. And my younger brother Mitch, who is a fantastic musician also, so he'll play keyboard, piano, and we just grab a great time, like we always do. I always tell people that the part we get paid for is hauling the equipment around and carrying it in and out. The fun part in the middle, that's, you get that for free.
That is the best way I've ever heard it described. I mean, my experience from playing over the years, that's the same way. I don't think I can remember a job that I didn't enjoy, that I really, you know, I just always thought to myself, I am so lucky to be out here. And yeah, you did get paid for it, but that's the best way I've ever heard it put. You got paid to get there, haul the equipment in and out, and then the rest was frosting on the cake. That would be good.
Yeah, the rest is the fun part, you know. And we played last night in a beer garden down here in Milwaukee, and I actually threw that line at one of the bartenders, and he said that he had the same reaction.
Okay.
I never heard it put that way, and that's great, you know.
So. Well, that's awesome. So how serious did you get with this Twin Lakes Trio? Did you do some recording at all ever, or how much did you do?
We did, as a matter of fact. I've got three recordings we did. Two of them, the first two, are still on cassette tape, which I know that's as bad as having one on LP nowadays.
Yeah.
I'm in the process of having those converted to CD, so they'll be digital, you know, and a little more up-to-date.
Sure.
The first one, the title of the album is Clear as Mud.
Okay.
And that features the original three, me and Mike and Kenny Pavic, our original drummer.
Okay.
The next one, titled Outstanding in Their Field, which we did a play on words. The picture on the front of the album is Mike and Matt and I standing in a soybean field, and so we used a little wordplay, outstanding, so outstanding being one word.
Okay.
And rather than, you know, here we are outstanding in our field. Anyway, and then the third album, we couldn't come up with a title, so we just left it blank.
Okay. And
we called it the untitled version.
All right. And what style would you, you know, describe yourself as?
Dutchman
style. Okay. All right. Yep. So basically it's all concertina work, concertina solos, and probably similar to, what would you say, Ray Conkle maybe, or something of that sort? Or
Ray Conkle, Dale Damon, Carl Hartwick, you know, that's sort of styling. I guess I would have to put it under.
When they do concertina solos. Okay.
Yep, sure. The concertina work, yeah, without the horns. I tried having horns in the band, and while I love having horns, it just adds another level of complexity to all aspects.
Exactly. Yep. You're dealing with more fingers on the hand, and every time you got one, there's that chance that one's going to be sore. In other words, try to schedule that many musicians. That's what I've heard from a number of the bands. The bigger the band, the more headaches. So.
And it's true, you know, and I saw it when I played with the Good Time Dutchman, you know, that's a six-piece band.
Yep.
And there were times where Ralph Tull, the band leader, you know, the night before the gig, he's trying to find a trumpet player or something, you know.
Sure.
And I ran into that, too, out here. You know, there's a lot of musicians, but there's not.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is there's a lot of musicians, but they're all busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's so much, you know, there's a lot to do out here. So I ran into, you know, trying to find a steady tuba player, trying to find a steady drummer. And that gets really frustrating after a while. And that's where I'm very thankful that my son got into it. And so his schedule is easy. I know where he lives.
Yeah.
So I know when he's available.
that's right. And what age did you say he is? Is he still in school age? Or?
Yep, he's 12.
He's 12. Okay. Yeah. Junior high probably then.
Yep, 12 years old, 7th grade. He is in the school band. He's in the percussion section, of course. And if I may be so bold as to brag a little bit, I received a call last week from the president of the Wisconsin Polka Hall of Fame that my son Zach is going to be receiving a Youth Achievement Award from the Wisconsin Polka Hall of Fame this year.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah, we're very excited about that, very proud of him. He does a fantastic job. He's a great drummer. He's a good kid, for the most part.
Sure. A normal 12-year-old, I would say, huh?
Yep, normal 12-year-old.
Sure.
But, you know, we have, like I say, when we go play, we have a great time together. We did just a two-piece last night at this beer garden, and we had a blast with it. We had a good time.
That's great. So, a question I was going to ask, and I'll let you ramble on just a little bit. Talk about some of the players that you have that have influenced you over the years playing the concertina. Well, first of all, did you get started self-taught, or you said your dad taught you a little bit? You didn't take any other lessons then, did you?
Not formally, no.
Not formally, okay.
But along the way, sorry if I was rambling, or I tend to do that.
No, that's fine. I need you to do that right now. Talk about some of the great concertina players that you've looked up to, idolized a little bit.
Well, along the way, I did have a lot of help, and I'm not ashamed to admit that at all. You know, so Dad got me started. Jerry Minar was and has been a big influence on my career all along. Jerry's a great guy, builds a fantastic concertina. I did get a brand new concertina from him back in 2005. That's another story we'll have to share on another show. But guys like Jerry, Dale Damon, my dad used to take me to watch Dale play at the Waconia. Was at the VFW or the Moose Lodge? I think it was the VFW. So we used to go watch Dale Damon and the Polka Beats play quite a bit. Carl was a huge influence on me. And, he taught me a lot to, like I said, very informally. But I think those are the best lessons, you know, as a musician you can learn, is that off to the side, let's just sit around and talk. So, you know, Carl again, guys like Dale, Larry Novotny was a huge influence on me growing up because we all lived in Montgomery, very small town. Larry's extremely popular there, and Larry's another great guy, great, great box player, good entertainer. And, we grew up with those guys, with Larry and his family and that. So, you know, and now, like, for instance, this afternoon, I'm going to take a 20-minute drive and go see my good friend Gary Brigham.
Oh, my goodness.
This afternoon. So
really? Where is he at?
The Hustis Ford Community Center, which used to be a fire hall. They're celebrating their 80th anniversary there.
Okay.
you know, of that facility. So Gary and the Ridgeland Dutchman, they're playing there, so we decided, if I got nothing going on this afternoon, we're going to go see Gary this afternoon. So, you know, the big players like that, you know, and I've got to meet and talk with, you know, Ray Dorschner and all of these great guys out here that, you know, if I would have stayed in Minnesota, I wouldn't have got to meet the really, really greats that are out here, too. So
yep.
Very fortunate growing up. You know, I got to meet Christy Hingle, got to, you know, spend some time with him. And,
sure.
And, you know, the guys from New Ulm, guys like Donnie Klossner, who played for the Wagner Band, you know, and the history is the great part for me, too. So
absolutely.
All of those guys, you know, all those guys, everybody's got a small influence.
Uh-huh.
You know, along the way. Some a little more, some a little less, but, you know, when you're growing up, your mind is a blank piece of paper, and everybody makes their mark on it in some way. So,
did you get asked along the way ever to sit in with any of the bands doing concertina work besides?
Sure did. And another name that I just thought of now when you mentioned that was Larry Rajavi.
Oh yeah,
he was another one. I had a cassette of his, and I think I just about wore that one out.
Uh-huh.
There's too many names to list. Jim Reeder, the Czech Light.
Yep.
That's another big name in the New Prague area. He was very influential, too. He, you know, another great guy. Got an awesome music store there. So, Larry Rajavi, I got to sit in with him. Sat in a bunch with Carl. Sat in a bunch with Dale Damon.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those guys, and they're so gracious about it. You know, come on up and play. Get up here.
Oh, that's great.
Don't worry about it. Just stand there and smile and play. And Carl was the one who gave me the best advice I think I may have ever got, was it's not whether or not you make a mistake, it's how you cover it up when you make one.
Okay. I never heard it explained that way either, but it's true. It really is true. Everybody's going to have a squeaker. I don't care how good you are, but I think Carl would have to be the champion. I mean, he is so good when he does his recordings. I mean, some of those that I'm thinking of there, I mean, they can play so flat and off key and stuff that, you know, and it's on purpose, but it disguises any mistakes that they might have made, I think. It's just professional. It's good.
And they can fake it so well it fits.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the trick to it, you know, and I don't read music on stage. I've got everything memorized. And that's a double-edged sword. That means that you have to remember how the songs all go. And the view is, if you make a mistake, well, how do you know? Because you're not looking at the music anyway.
Well, I've played drums over the years with a few concertina players, and I've seen them start in on one song and ending up on another song, you know, just because they weren't reading music. And they just get one of those mind blanks where it takes them from the beautiful rose to the faded rose or something like that or another. But they just play it out, and the people keep dancing, and everything is fine.
Yeah, and most people wouldn't know unless you tell them.
That's right.
You know, I watched Jerry Schuff do that one time at the Gibbon Polka Fest.
Oh, did you?
Jamboree. Started out, he was going to play the Cherry Picker Polka, and he got five measures into it and bombed it.
Uh-huh.
So he bends down to the microphone and says, "Oh, I was just watching to see if you're listening." And he started all over and he nailed it.
He did. Sounds like only something Jerry could do. Yep.
Yep, and he was another great guy. You know, just a fantastic man and a great box player. So
you bet. I think we've just about covered all the really good concertina players. The only two that come to mind. Did you ever do anything with Elmer Scheid and Ernie Koopman?
Elmer Scheid, I only got to meet a couple different times. Never really got to talk to him a whole lot, but you know, still one of the best bands there was. And yes, Ernie Koopman, very, very, very big influence. I would call him my mentor.
Okay.
One of the top ones. Spent a lot of time at Ernie's house in Mankato.
Did you?
Well, and it's sort of twofold. I bought a concertina that was kind of a lemon, and so Ernie did concertina repairs.
Ah.
And so I spent a ton of time there. We worked on this concertina a lot. And so the good part was, you know, Ernie had the Jolly Brewer Orchestra back in the, I think in the 60s.
Yep.
And then he had an accident where he injured his hand.
Sure.
And so he quit that band, and then once he was able to heal up and he started the Stagemen, which was a three-piece band also.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy, you know, fantastic man, the whole family there, you know, fantastic.
Sure.
His wife Sharon and all their kids. And you know, Ernie was, I would have to say, probably the top influence in, you know, in everything I learned. He taught me what I need to know about concertina repairs, which, you know, he taught me how to tune them, taught me how to work on them, you know, and stuff like that. And that's actually gotten me through a few gigs here this past 4th of July weekend. We were playing at a polka fest and had a little issue with one of my boxes. And right there on stage, I took it apart, fixed it, put it back together, and kept playing.
So, wow, you know. That's incredible. That's awesome. I was going to say, I used to play trumpet in the band, and I got nervous taking one of the valves out during the show. Can't imagine taking a concertina apart.
No, I had to use my pocket knife because they didn't have a screwdriver.
Uh-huh.
So there I was kneeling on stage with a pocket knife. You know, I took the four screws out of the end and took the cap off, and the end cover, I should say, and
sure.
Fixed what was wrong, and, you know, the show goes on. So, you know, there's a lot that I learned over the years that's come in very handy, and some of it not so much, but that was one of them where, you know, being able to, you know, take one apart and it's got this issue or that issue, and, you know, it's good to know what's inside of these things. You know, it's not just... they're a very complex instrument, you know, don't get me wrong, but,
yep.
You know, I think it's good to know what's inside them and how they work. I think that's
very,
how I like to know how stuff works. Too.
Very good. What concertina did you start out on, John?
Well, I started out on my dad's 1936 Lang.
Okay.
Old German made concertina. They were imported, I think, by the Paddock factory, or, you know, VTech Elsnick out of Chicago, I think.
What key?
Key of C.
Key of C, okay.
Uh-huh. Yep. And then my dad acquired a 1938 Paddock.
Okay.
Key of C also, which I now have. Got that from dad, which is really cool. He bequeathed that to me. And then when I was in high school, I bought a Star, B-flat Star from Cliff Thermal. Had a music store in St. Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought that from him, and he let me make payments. I had the age of, I think I was about 14 at the time. And I paid that off the cliff, and we did have some trouble with that concertina just for the amount of playing I was doing. And then Star had a couple different style of keyboards that they used, and this keyboard didn't fit my hand all that well. The older I got, and my hands grew. So I traded it back to Cliff for a 1976 Brown.
Okay.
Built in New Ulm at Brown's Music Store, and I've had that concertina ever since.
Okay,
and that one doesn't leave.
Okay, and that one is what, a C also?
That's a B flat.
That's a B flat. All right, and yep. Then you said you got a new one from Jerry Menar.
Yep, I got a brand new Hengel in 2005, and that one I keyed it really weird, which it's really cool. It's the key of B natural. So it's halfway between a B flat and a C.
Okay.
Half step off. And it sounded spectacular, but nobody could play with the darn thing because it was keyed so weird.
Uh-huh.
A lot of flats, a lot of sharps, really weird keys. Then I changed the reeds a couple times in it. It was an E flat for a while, and I put B flat reeds in it out of mine, and I did some switching around. And then, like a fool, I sold it in 2010.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it went to Tom Moran down in Mankato.
Playing with the Wendingers. Yep.
Yep. And it came up on social media here a couple of years ago, or a year and a half ago, I guess. What's your favorite concertina and why? And I commented, you know, the Hengel I had built, I wish I'd have never sold it. And Tom responded, well, how would you like to have it back?
Oh, really?
So, yep. So once in a lifetime chance, they said, I'm not... not doing that again, so I bought it back from Tom, and I've got it back. And now it's in the key of C.
Okay. Awesome.
And, that's my number one box. I play it. My four other boxes don't hardly get played much anymore. I play that at my Hengel.
Sure.
Pretty much exclusively.
Sure. Well, very good.
Machine, all that, so.
Our time is running short, John, but a couple of questions yet for you. Number one is when you pick up the concertina, your favorite song to play. What's the first song that comes out of the box if you play one?
Ooh, that's a toughie. Depends on what I'm doing. If we're at a gig, I like to start it with an easy tune, Clock on the Steeple Polka.
Okay.
Easy song. It's a good one to get kind of everything lined up. If I'm at home, I'll just plunk out a few notes, maybe a scale or two, and then I'll start on something that's ridiculously difficult that I should be practicing more than what I do.
Okay.
So I do get a request from, you know, almost every time we play. I know one Don Grayla tune, it's the Chromatic Polka.
Oh, yes.
I get requested that, you know, on a frequent basis, so that's a tune I practice fairly regular. Another one I picked out is, and Dale Damon started it, so we're going to blame him. The tune Circling Pigeons Landler, which was written as a waltz, and Dale converted it to a polka.
Yes, he did.
It's a really cool song. I love it. It's got a lot of finger work in it, and if you really want to nail it, that's another tune that I stay practiced up on pretty good.
There you go. You bet.
You know, those two, and those are the hard ones that I practice. But if I want to just plunk out a tune, I like to pick out something easy.
Sure. Do you do any of the traditional favorites, like the Hanswurst or the Ellen or any of those?
Yes,
okay.
Definitely.
Yeah, Roller Coaster.
Hanswurst, Ellen, Blue Skirt Waltz, Roller Coaster was one of my mom's favorites, so we play that.
Sure.
You know, at the gigs, we'll do, you know, Christmas Toy.
Okay.
You know, written by Carl.
Yeah.
So we cover pretty much all the New Ulm Waltz, the hard-to-get polka, which out here they call it the New Ulm favorite.
Okay, yep.
You know, and pretty much the standard popular tune, you know, Das Gufstein Lied.
Sure, Waltz, sure.
And, you know, kind of cover the, like you say, all the traditional popular tunes.
Sure, sure.
Pretty much cover all of those. And I like to do, fancier finger work, so.
Sure.
I stay on, and with the job I have to practice more. I'm a mechanic at a John Deere dealership.
Sure.
So my hands get pretty stiff by the end of the day, and if I don't practice, I can really feel it, you know?
Sure.
So I practice. I try to practice almost every night for at least a half hour, and that's the best thing for me, really. It's good stress reliever at the end of the day, and it keeps me in shape for when it's gig time, and, you know, what better way to pass the time, really.
Really. And what is the future looking like for John these days? You got a lot of work lined up? Have you got gigs or a lot of jobs lined up?
We actually do. We played quite a bit this summer. With having my steady drummer, it's easier to book out more because I know his schedule, you know. And my tuba player, Greg, out here does a lot of our bookings for us.
Oh, I see.
Really, really helped me a lot.
You bet.
He has more time to be on the phone. He has more connections, which is great. And so he books a lot of the gigs. We call him our band managers.
Okay.
So he does a great job. So if he's setting the gigs up, I know he's going to be there, right? So that's one level of stress away for me. So, yep, we've got several festivals out here and that we do. Now I picked up some work at these. There's two beer gardens out here. One is in Milwaukee. One is in an old town called Germantown. So I'm doing some two-piece work there, my son Zach and I. And we sucked the last 4 or 5 weekends. We've been pretty busy. So we're very, very thankful that way. The future of polka is, shaky, I think. But
yeah.
I personally think the Sunday... You know, the Sunday old-time dances, with the crowd up in age and some of them are passing on. And there's not a lot of young people that are getting into the Sunday dance thing as much. And so we're finding more and more work at, back to doing bar jobs, beer gardens, parties, festivals, stuff like that, which is great.
You bet.
A lot of fun.
You bet. Great atmosphere at those.
It is. Yeah. It really is. It's a great time. So, which is good, and with a small group like we have, and we're pretty diverse. We've got a great mix, from young to old.
Sure.
And in the band, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So we can fit those venues really well and have a great time doing it. So
that's
we're
awesome.
Actually getting busier and busier every year, you know, so.
Very good.
Getting the name back out there and letting people know that, hey, we're back to booking jobs again. Like I said, I had taken some time off, so, you know, getting the name back out and getting some more things going, and we're going to be starting on a recording here this winter and hope to have that out in the spring, so.
Very good. Then we'll look forward to getting some, what do you call it again, Twin City Trio? Is that?
Twin Lakes Trio.
Twin Lakes Trio. We'll be looking forward to getting some of that music up here in central Minnesota.
Definitely.
You bet. Well, last question, John. Our time has about run out, and I always ask each and every guest, think back over your career. Any memorable moments that stand out, whether it was a dance job or an experience at a job or getting to or from or anything that stands out in your mind?
Well, we don't have that much time, Si.
Okay.
but I do remember, one that sticks out. We played at Taste of Minnesota. We were last minute fill-in. There was a band that canceled, and we wound up playing at the Taste of Minnesota, right in, it's right around the capital in St. Paul.
Okay.
And there was supposed to be 4 days there. We had to cut it to three. It's over 4th of July weekend. We were already committed to my brother. We were going to play at his house party. Well, so we play his house party, and we've got to play Taste of Minnesota the next day. And by golly, there's a bunch of beer left in the keg.
Oh.
So we loaded the keg up and a bottle of Jack Daniels, and we took that with us to Taste of Minnesota. And we rolled that keg was in a garbage cart, you know, a big like a 90-gallon garbage cart. Rolled it right up to the back of the stage, and Wally Pickle was playing, and we started tapping beer onto. To all the musicians that were up there, and I never heard Wally laugh so hard.
Oh, that's a great, great story.
We were young, and we did all kinds of dumb stuff like that, but, we had a lot of fun. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got arrested, so it was all in fun.
What it's all about. You bet. Well, John, our time has run out, and boy, this has been very, very entertaining. I'm sure the listeners echo my thoughts here. We look forward to, you know, I tell each and every guest, the good Lord willing, you and I are here down the road sometime. We'll do this thing again.
Sure, I look forward to it. That'd be great.
Well, thank you very much, and we wish you a great day today. Hope you have a good time over there watching Gary and the Ridgeland Dutchman.
Oh, we will, Si. Thank you.